now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there. Welcome to Wine Times, brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. I'm Annika Rice.
And I'm Will Lyons, the Sunday Times wine columnist and vice president of the Sunday Times Wine Club. Throughout this series, we'll be sharing our love of wine and travel with a host of special guests.
From comics, actors, novelists and more, we'll be hearing about their travelling adventures, giving you a real feel for each region and, more importantly, a taste of it, thanks to Will and his stash of wine.
We're here in London Bridge, our own two-storey wine bar, tap and bottle. It has a lively, bustling atmosphere and plenty of character. The perfect spot to pour the wine and have a good time.
Hello, everyone. Well, discussing and decanting with Will and myself today is the multi-talented Clark Peters. And we're in a wine bar in the middle of London. It's called the Tap and Bottle. It's a bustly old place. You might hear a train. In fact, you can enjoy this podcast and listen out for as many vehicles and modes of transport as you can possibly spot. I can't tell you how excited I am about this because I haven't seen this man for decades, which is odd because in the 80s, I kind of stalked him and hung out in his dressing room when he was appearing and, well, he wrote and appeared in Five Guys Named Mo. And I was a bit of a nuisance, I feel, Clark.
You were never
I'm so
a nuisance,
sorry.
Elliot.
Well, Clark, people will know you for so many things, for your acting and television roles, such as Detective Lester Freeman in HBO's The Wire, Albert Lambreur in Tremé. You'll know him from the big screen too, starring roles in Da Five Bloods, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Notting Hill. You've had a distinguished career in music. We mentioned Five Guys Named Mo, which you devised and appeared in, obviously. You're a founding member of the soul group, The Majestics. You went on to be a backup singer on the hits Love and Affection by Joan Armatrading and Boogie Nights by Heatwave. I don't know where you're most at home, but you've been in Chess, Chicago, Porgy and Bess. We are thrilled that you're here to join us for our programme today, which is going to be all about Portugal.
Yes.
And how, you know, there are so many things we've mentioned there in that resume of your career. What, you know, what do you think of yourself as? To me, you're a musical man.
I've never heard that list run off before, so I'm kind of
overwhelmed. You did get a bit dizzy, didn't you?
I see myself as an artist.
And you are literally an artist because you paint as well. We haven't even added that to the list.
Sometimes, yes. My canvas now is the garden in Portugal. That's the canvas.
I mean, you will always be the musical man for me.
Well, thank you.
Oh, God, I loved that show, Five Guys Named Mo. I just loved it. And you brought it back. I can't remember when it came. Was it in
2017?
And yes, I took my sons to see it with such a preamble. Guys, you don't understand. In the 80s, every night, I went to see this show again. I popped in to see Clark and all the lads. And they just looked a bit blankly and thought, Mum, we thought she was mad. This is absolute proof.
Did they
but
have a
actually,
good time?
They loved it and they good. Really got it because it's very, good. It's a very touching piece. It's about a forlorn man who's sort of wanting some emotional
support.
Rescue, really.
Yes. And you know, we don't get that. You know, we men don't want to talk about how it might hurt to have a broken heart. You know, we prefer like just it's cool, man. Give me another pint.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, but that's something to carry and when you see your sisters or your mothers or your girlfriends going through it, something vibrates in you. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was nice to have a platform to like say, like, we feel kind of funky sometimes.
It was ahead of its time in the 80s, as you say, with men sort of reaching out and talking about their feelings. And it was all set to the songs of Louis Jordan.
Yes.
It's just lovely. Oh, God, perhaps after this you'll give me a little burst just so I can. So tell us, because we've chosen, obviously, Portugal, Portuguese wines for you today.
Yes.
Tell us how you ended up in Portugal.
Well, I guess about 12 years ago, a very good friend of mine, Kevin Gould, who was a writer for The Guardian, Food and Travel, had invited us over for a weekend. And we went to this little town called Olhão. It was really charming. We were invited in to a room that was falling apart. And there must have been a dozen tables there with two people sitting at each table. None of the tables were the same. None of the chairs were the same. It was intergenerational.
Yeah.
There was candles on the table that had burned on down in some places. And there was a young boy with a guitar, an old man with a mandolin, and a woman singing the fado. And I thought, I've got to come here again, which I did. And then we found a place.
Oh, I'm so glad because it's perfect. We were looking for someone to snuggle in with Portugal. Because so far we've traveled from, well, we've been to Croatia, Australia, Argentina, Italy, England, and America. And we've sampled some delicious wines with some people who are real wine experts and others who just enjoy a glass. Where do you fit in?
I enjoy a glass.
Good. Yeah,
There's no way I'm an expert on wine.
No, but we like that.
I'm an expert at drinking it. But.
We like that because Will is quite expert. He takes quite a long time sniffing, snorting, sipping, spitting. It's an exhausting process.
But I love that story because I think it was Hugh Johnson that wrote that, you know, for a wine lover, Portugal is a place for wine romantics. You know, you have the whitewash walls, the brilliant azure skies, and the climate there is ideal for grapes. If you get a bunch of wine collectors or wine experts in a room together and you ask them, you know, where is the most exciting place at the moment? I think there are two countries emerged. The first one is South Africa and the second one would be Portugal.
Really?
Yeah, because it's had this, especially in the 21st century, it's had this wave of a new generation. And what they have, a little like Italy and a little like Greece, is they've kept their own grape varieties, their own indigenous grape. So they haven't imported the big names like Chardonnay or Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot. So you have original flavours there.
Yeah.
All these different characters.
But we're going north of Madeira to start with, aren't we? To the Azores.
So we're starting at the far end. So they've only been making wine there, well, good wine quite recently, but we're going to the Azores. So we're 900 miles west of Lisbon. And we're at the far end of the Portuguese wine route with our first wine, the Archipelago. I think that's how you pronounce it. How's your Portuguese?
My Archipelago. Portuguese.
Archipelago.
No, let's see. Pelagião.
Pelagião. Oh,
Pelagião. You have to get the nyao.
I mean, when I went to up in the Douro, they have a place called, exactly like you said, it's Pinhão.
Yes.
And when I first went there in 95, I was calling it Pinheio.
Oh, it's so difficult.
Yeah.
So this presumably is grown in a volcanic soil.
Absolutely. So I think
how
there's,
does that affect things?
It's grown on the Azores island of Pico. It's a volcanic island, home to Portugal's largest mountain, actually. So it's grown, the grape varieties are grown on lava soils. And this gives it this really tangy, almost like a lick of salt on the finish. Can I pour myself that?
Yes,
first.
Then,
sorry,
your show,
it's
been
like a
dinner
party. We'll crack on because he takes for hours. We'll do a bit of our own.
But actually,
I'm already spilling it. Sorry.
It was discovered in the 15th or 14th century, the Azores. And there was a chap called Henry the Navigator.
Oh, I like. Oh, God.
And he bought the wine there originally from Crete or maybe Cyprus.
I know. I haven't even had anything to drink yet. Yeah. It's all over the table.
It's funny you should mention Henry the Navigator because when I think of Portugal, because I was obsessed with my A-level history subject, which was very much the age of discovery. You know, and all those explorers like Vasco da Gama, Henry the Navigator, Magellan. You know, when they set sail, they they really went into nothing. They had no idea where they were going. They didn't even know whether they were going to fall off the edge of the world. Mm. So it's rather lovely that we've got this link.
And also, imagine leaving these damp, windswept islands. Mm. And then you go over the English Channel, it's cold and gunmetal sky. The Bay of Biscay is rough. Mm. And then as soon as you hit the Azores and Portugal, it's this blue sky. They must have thought they were in paradise.
Yeah. No, mind blowing. Yeah. But what's in it? What was in the Portuguese sort of heads to make them want to reach out so much? I mean, that's a weird national characteristic.
I think what it is history. You know, you think that for 700 years the Moors were there. They were that's the last place they were when they were kicked out. And they left a lot. I mean, where they were seafaring people anyway, coming from North Africa. So it makes sense that they would be the first of Europeans to begin to go on out post that epoch. You know, and then they're going south. They know the trade routes because the Moroccans or the North Africans were using that to go back and forth between there and South America or parts of America anyway.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is not readily documented because of whatever reason people want to hold on to history. But it makes sense that, you know, that they should be the ones that are going out because that's also where those trade winds and those currents come around, you know, and change every year.
And also they are bordering this amazing ocean. And wherever you are in Portugal, you're only 100 miles from the sea.
If that.
But you were talking about that Moorish influence, because what I love is about Lisbon, most of all, because I'm obsessed with the colour blue, are all the tiles, which are everywhere. Wherever you go, you talk about the hills. You'll go up and down hill, and then you'll find just a fountain covered in tiles, or the town square, or any monument.
Yes.
Beautiful.
They really,
and it's not even just decorative. You feel it's really part of the building.
Oh, yes.
It's part of the building process.
And they also, they write, those tiles that they write, or they write stories on those and put, you know, whole sides of buildings, you know, have the history of what went on there, whether there was a church or whether it was a convent or somebody, Magellan, coming on back and having to stop there for an evening or whatever.
And if you're just visiting for a very short time, you couldn't... there are tile shops. There are people crafting tiles and painting tiles. So that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Apart from eating your lovely custard tarts, you go and watch those custard tarts. I shouldn't have said.
Oh, my.
Honestly, that was the most mind-blowing thing, watching that custard being oozled into the tart.
You know, I'm a vegetarian. So I don't really go for the natas.
Mm.
Yeah. Like my wife does, but she turned me on to a vegan one right there by the main square in Lisbon. My God. There's no eggs in this. There's nothing but just delightful stuff dancing on your tongue.
Yeah.
And it's those natas that...
Port Lisbon, you just go there. I was going to say you go there for the tiles and the tarts. Yes. That sounds wrong. but you know what I mean. You can't go wrong.
You go there for the tiles and the tarts.
I was only there for 24 hours because I was about to board a cruise ship and go and do some stand-up comedy to a whole load of very old people. But I had this 24 hours in this magical city. Is this wine going to complement that memory?
But this would be wonderful with, you know, just simple... grilled sardines or, you know, olive oil.
Do you eat can you eat fish?
No, I don't eat fish.
Can we fish, no mention of fish from
No. You can't be in Portugal and not at least appreciate that there are people
enjoy
who appreciate
the sizzle,
fish.
The sardine. Anyway, cheers.
Well, cheers. Well, let's have a look. It's a pale straw colour.
Are you a white or a red?
I imagine.
I'm a red man.
But don't worry, because we've got up some lovely reds. But this is all about the... As I said, that sort of the texture and the tanginess.
Mm.
I think someone
it is tangy, isn't it?
As like diving into the sea, it's got so much. Well, let's have a go.
It's got some nice legs on it, huh?
Yeah. We have a
tell
lot
me
of
about legs. Tell me, I've heard
well, the
people.
Legs, just the way you speak, Clark. Can we just get it out there that your voice is rather pleasant?
It's very nice.
While you're drinking.
You're making me feel so weird.
As I'm drinking a glass of wine, I only want your voice, Clark, from now on.
The legs are quite disappointing, Clark. It's just the alcohol separating out from the wine. It doesn't... And actually, we tend to refer to them as tears now.
Oh.
Yes, in the modern...
Tears?
Yeah, tears. The tears of the wine.
It does look like that. And what causes that to happen? You said alcohol?
Yeah, it's just the alcohol separating from the wine. So the more... But this doesn't have... this is only 12.5%.
So when I see a lot of those tears or legs...
Legs.
...running around there, and is it like the more there are, the more alcohol?
Yes, sometimes, yes. But also, rather boringly, it could just be also the way the glass has been cleaned as well.
For the grips. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's one of those myths that it doesn't equate to anything about the quality of the wine.
Okay.
But people always... Right. And I think this is very sort of...
He still hasn't had a sip. Would well,
I
had a
I did.
Had a quick one. Okay.
I thought he was sitting with his nose.
We call it Will's foreplay because it goes on for hours. Do you know what I mean? We've had half a bottle and he's on a polite sip, which he's not even swallowing.
But there isn't much aroma on this. This is all about chilling it down.
Yeah,
having it on that blisteringly hot quayside, you know.
Yes.
And so, I mean, this would be very nice, I think, with a salad with sort of feta cheese and tomatoes.
I agree with that.
I think because the high acidity would.
Yeah. And I think that if you, from what I remember of sardines, it would go well with sardines as well.
Yeah,
what you remember?
Oh, so what? Always. Yes. Was there a moment when you gave up fish and meat?
Yeah. 1986.
Oh, is it anything to do with my time in the dressing room with you?
No.
That's around that time.
That followed. I was growing vegetables down in the West Country and I had some chickens and a couple of ducks, and I was ready to wring their necks and have them for dinner. And a fox came in and just mauled them.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't even kill them. I woke up and there was flapping wings and broken necks, and they were suffering, and I was suffering. And I think my girlfriend and the farmer say, if you're that attached, you know, then you don't need to be eating them.
Mm.
You know, so I stopped eating them, you know. I feel now, and particularly because I am down in Portugal, you know, that if my son says he wants something, I would say, look, let's go on out and see how this is done.
Yeah.
Let's go fishing, right? And I'll take the fish and I'll scale it and I'll clean it out. And I haven't forgotten these things, you know, but I think that if you're going to eat it, kill it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the bottom line, you know, so... And it's much easier to grow vegetables than to try to kill a
So tell us about your Portuguese garden. Is it? It's a huge vegetable garden.
I'm getting there.
Thought of you now tending your garden.
Oh, I was there just a couple of weeks ago, growing things and just letting them be. Just let the cauliflower be, let the broccoli be, let it reseed itself and see what happens. But last week we had some friends on over and we just went outside and picked up some things and came inside and we ate, and that was it. And they were amazed that you could do this. And you know what? It cost me nothing but the seeds it took to put in there.
Yeah, that's
true. Know, and now it'll continue on like that, you know. Some of those things are weird, and I'm learning as I go along. I'd when I first got there, I put in a row of carrots, and a friend came by and said, you got 15 carrots. I said, no, I got 15 bunch. Oh, no, they don't grow in bunches. There's one carrot, one seed. So I went and I figured, okay, I've got to put some more in. And I couldn't speak Portuguese at that point in time. And I was looking at the packages, right? And I saw what looked like heritage carrots. You know, they were long and they were deep purple. And I thought, oh, I've had these in India. This is really nice. So I put a whole row of them in. And when I say a whole row, the row must have been about 50 yards long. Well, my daughter-in-law comes on over and I'm showing the garden. I'm very proud. And she says, and what's that? And I said, oh, those are heritage carrots. She says, I don't think so. I said, what do you mean, don't think so? Those are heritage. Look at them. They're... She says, Dad, I think those are radishes. I had radishes for days.
Waiting for them just to elongate slightly. That pinkish tinge is a bit weird.
It was so peculiar. Oh, my.
But they're quite good for you, aren't they, radishes?
Yes, but not thousands of them.
This is Wine Times with Annika Rice.
And Will Lyons.
We'll be back with more great wine and conversations before you even get a chance to top up your glass.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's so funny, Clark, hearing you talk so sort of lyrically about your garden when most people will know you from The Wire. Which is quite a long way from that picture.
That's a long way from The Wire, baby.
Playing Detective Lester Freeman. And I read somewhere that you said he's the man you want to be when you grow up, yeah. Implying that you haven't quite got there yet. Or perhaps yeah. That was an old interview and you have grown up.
No, I'd still love to be that cat. I guess if you could write your life, I'd find some of his qualities that are, and the qualities of the writers. Yeah, the men who put it together.
I mean, it is extraordinary, a series like that, because I think, by the third series, it's reached Spain and it's reached around Europe, and everyone has, it's such a universal story, as all good stories are, so that you've got the Spanish thinking, this is Spain, this is actually what goes on in Spain. You've got, in Ireland, you've got Belfast, Dublin, claiming it as their story.
Yep.
It's the universality of it. It's so extraordinary. It's not just Baltimore.
No, it's not.
A microcosm for everywhere,
else. You know, I was at the Edinburgh Festival and the cab screeches up. Two guys get out, and I think they're coming at me. They're moving kind of in an excited way, but they had just finished seeing the series. And they were like, it's Lester Freeman, it's Freeman. And I was like, no, but they claimed it as well.
Yeah.
For them, that was Glasgow.
I love that.
It was Paris. And I think that to shortcut that, it's just basically the way the Western world has been structured. I was really surprised that it had taken off in such a big way in France. It's called Le Tap.
Le tap. What is it in Portuguese?
I don't know.
Le tapis.
I'll drink to that.
Should we have some more wine?
Oh, yeah.
Because where are we going next?
Well, we're heading inland. We're heading up to, if we're sailing, I suppose, from the Azores, we're going to sail to Oporto, the great Douro Valley.
Yes.
So we're about 75 miles inland from Porto, in one of the last wildernesses in Europe, is there? Have you ever been there? And the sort of the vineyards go down; they almost look like terraces as they slip into the Douro River. There,
it's a thing you see on sort of travel documentaries.
Yeah, and
I'd love to go there. Actually,
I think one winemaker described it to me as a mountain viticulture in a blisteringly hot climate. Because in the summer, I mean, I mentioned Pinhal, it gets up to 40, 45. It's very, very hot.
Isn't that hard for grapes? I'm sorry.
No.
But the grapes can handle that. They actually close down if it gets so hot. That's not the problem. The problem is the sort of strange things that can happen during the growing season. But it might be, I mean, we are living through this time of change with the climate.
Mm.
So I know that the Symington family, who make Grahams, are experimenting, planting all new different grape varieties there to see what can,
And what's happened to port in the story?
Well, so port, which used to be hugely successful throughout the 19th and 20th century, we stopped drinking port in a way. I mean, of course, we drink it at high days and holidays, and we're coming into the festive period where we'll all have a glass of port, probably.
Oh,
but if you remember the 80s, like the early 80s, every city lunch would end with a glass of port.
I don't think Clark and I did city lunches in quite
East
the way
End pubs,
you did.
It was a big thing. Port and lemon.
Have you ever done a city lunch?
No. Port and Guinness. You know,
it used to be a thing, didn't it? Port and lemon in all the East End pubs.
Yeah, no, but I think I remember back in the, you know, 30 years ago at Christmas, someone would drudge up some old bottle of port and go, oh, there's some left over from last year, and we'd have it with cheese.
And I think what's happened is red wine has become much more approachable and supple. Mm. And we've got all these lovely wines from the Southern Hemisphere now, which sort of, you know, you can almost taste the summer. And they've got lots of red fruit. So you don't need port in the way that you did in the 60s and 70s, when red wine used to be quite acidic and austere. And
For their industry, very sad.
So, but the good news is they've started to make table wines. They've made, you know, they're making still wine. So that how you make port.
So it's the same cultivators. Yeah.
So you pick the grapes and you ferment it, but you stop the fermentation if you're making port by adding in the old days brandy. Now it's a base spirit. So that stops it immediately. That means that instead of the sugar converting to alcohol, all the sugars stay in, and that's why you get this sort of sweet. So the one we have here
is a
table wine. No, but made in the Douro Valley. This is what they're doing now.
Is it?
So it's the same grape varieties as port, but they haven't stopped the fermentation and they aged it in oak. Annika, I chose this one especially with you in mind.
Did you?
So this is a 2021 Villa Rissa Valley Gran Reserva from the Douro Valley in Portugal.
I know that smell.
So just look at it. The listeners can't see this, but it's opaque in the glass, isn't it? It looks like a port.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah.
Clark's happy.
Oh, wow. There we have it. What time of day is it now? That is really nice. Oh, don't spit it out, swallow it.
No,
go ahead.
Don't. This has been, honestly.
Oh, my God.
It's only a tiny little sip.
It's not going to ruin your palate. Your palate?
But it's
your palate. Listen, I just had one little drink and this is palate.
But also, you get that fruit, but also you get the sort of the oaky creaminess of the oak and the vanilla there, toastiness.
That is bloody lovely.
It's light. It's not. It's not.
Yeah. I love that. Although it's 15%. So it will. We'll start to feel this in a minute.
I think Clark's happy.
Yeah, that is nice. You know,
it's a rich velvet. Well, it's. Can I say it? It's like your voice, Clark. It's rich and velvety, isn't it?
Such a smoothie.
I know. I'll send you a bottle of wine. That is really nice. I would have that with a nice cheese.
Yeah.
In a salad, and I might. Really cook up some really nice tofu. Season it just right.
How does it work then? Do you slightly resent work now?
Yes.
So does that mean that roles you take on, if you're going to leave your idyll in Portugal, you really want to make sure they're worth doing?
There is that. There are times when I feel like an actor on a mission, you know, and And I don't think that's a bad thing, because that's what we're supposed to do.
Well, I think anyone who's in a position of power, it's such a sort of privilege to have that position of power. So to be able to shine a spotlight and tell people's stories, that's really exciting.
I don't know if it's a position of power.
Well, yeah, no, it is really, because you are able to make a difference. So isn't that position, doesn't that make you feel
It is empowering.
Empowering, okay.
But it's not necessarily a position of power, because the person who's hiring me has got the power.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the pawn.
Yeah.
You know, in that
but
respect.
You're a very good pawn.
Well, thank you.
As opposed to a prawn, which we don't touch.
Yeah. I'll leave the prawns alone.
Where are we going next?
Well, we're staying in the Douro Valley. So there are several different styles of port. And actually, with the bell chiming in the background, I feel like I'm in a square in Portugal. Do you?
Clark and I, who haven't been spitting, are swaying gently. I thought that
was in my head, actually.
No, I didn't know where that's come from. But, so you have reserve port, which is the sort of opaque and full of fruit. You have tawny port, which has been aged in the barrel. I think you sometimes see Graham's 10-year-old or Graham's 20-year-old.
Yes.
That means it's had 10 years in the barrel. That takes some of the sugar and you get this sort of amber colour and it's quite nutty.
So what's the opposite of a tawny port? A tawny port?
Will be vintage port.
Vintage port.
Now, vintage port is where it ages and improves in the bottle. Mm. And vintage port, it can last 100 years, actually, but you have to age it for at least 30 to 40 years.
And what's the process? You have to keep turning the bottle and or something like
that?
Well,
flat, horizontal. You want it in a room that's dark, where there's no vibration and the temperature is constant. I like it about sort of 12 degrees, so it's cool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, keep turning it because that's where you get the sediment foot falls to the bottom. But that's not too necessary. The day before you drink it, or 2 days before you drink it, if you've had it laying down for years, take it out the cellar and stand it up. Just stand it on the sideboard so all the sediment goes out.
Right.
So what the port shippers are doing is they're experimenting to try and get new products to market. So we've seen table wine. We've seen white port as well, which we've enjoyed not in this series, but we've enjoyed it. So this is a new one on me. Yeah. This is a rosé port.
Rosé port.
So all the colour from a wine comes from the skins of the grapes. So with rosé, you just gently press it. So if you think of rosé from Provence, it's made from a grape variety called Grenache, which is actually a dark grape. And you just gently press it, and that's where you get that sort of lovely salmon pink colour.
Oh, okay.
So that's what they've done here. They've gently pressed it.
So would this be like a sort of pudding wine?
Yes, but I think they want you to...
They want us to not have it as a shot.
You can have it all year round as an aperitif on one of those trendy bars that's sort of in Lisbon or by the port in Oporto.
It's a beautiful bottle. I'm liking the presentation.
I like the colour of that.
Yeah, and we're serving it slightly chilled. It's the Baronessa de Villa Rosé for Porto, and let's try it. And I'm putting, as you can see, this doesn't look like a port, does it? It's sort of...
You pour almost, such a lot in your glass for someone who's not...
I know. Well,
taste
I do that
it.
Because I like to swirl it around. Sorry. It is wasteful, actually.
You see all the crew sitting. That's just such a waste. That's 4 inches of alcohol you've got in there.
4 inches? she's not talking about ounces. She's talking about inches.
Sorry, I haven't gone metric.
I got 4 feet of... it's a really
that would be the dream, 4 feet. It's just sweet, isn't it?
Is it? I haven't tasted it. I'm just trying to get... I'm trying to think of what... I can't describe the smell. It doesn't even smell like wine.
No, and there's some sort of red currant.
Philippa Perry said one of the wines smelt like cleaning fluid. But she didn't mean it in a bad way, because she loves the smell of cleaning fluid. Turns out she is a dab hand with a marigold glove. All she wants to do is to be sticking her nose... Yeah. Under the sink.
Smells, the same part of the brain, as you know, long-term memory and emotion. Mm-hmm. So they bring back these memories. Mm. You'll be in the deepest, darkest winter in London and you'll smell some coriander.
Oh,
and suddenly
brother,
you're transported back to Portugal.
Yes, I am.
And then you get emotional.
I get emotional because I'm not there. That's the only reason why I get that way.
It's much lighter than I imagined. I thought it was going to be very cloying.
And you could have it as an aperitif. Yeah. I don't think you need to pair it with anything, actually. I think you just have this. Quite nice over Christmas, actually.
Wow.
You know,
when
you've got all the family staying, as you said, intergenerational family.
I'm going to have another
sip. And there'll be somebody there that says, I only like sweet things. And this is actually quite nice to pour, isn't it?
It's very pleasant. Pleasant, such an awful word.
As we gather around the television and watch.
But it's...
And Annika.
That's going down very well.
Yeah, it's very nice. I agree. And that's what it is. There's nothing wrong with producing something that's just light and simple.
So are you saying good for them?
Yeah, good for them. I think so. I think there's a place for every wine and every style.
No, but it's good for them that they've bothered to try and take their business into another arena.
I love the color of that. That is so pretty.
How would you describe that?
Well, at one point in time, it looked like a rosé, but now it's looking more amber.
Yeah, more amber.
It'll be blue by the time you've finished it. It's nearly purple now.
I know. I'm wondering if it's my eyes or not. I'm not too sure.
Are we going to see that in the Clark Peters house, perhaps, over Christmas?
You could. You really could. I mean,
Will and I will be there as well, because that's part of the deal.
As a matter of fact, we'll be sitting just like this in the corner of my kitchen while everyone's over there with the mics.
Telling your family what to drink and what to do. And now we're going to have some tofu over here and sardines for the lucky ones over there. Clark, I just have to mention and ask how you got involved in the Parisian production of Hair when you were 19. was that as much as a surprise as it sounds on paper?
Yes.
Because that wasn't really what, you know.
Well, it wasn't that. It wasn't that. My brother was in the production. I went over.
Your parents sent you over to
collect
him.
To bring him back.
Because
they thought he was just messing about, you know, and he had, actually. But when I got there, I had been auditioning for Hair in New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, I auditioned for Hair so many times in America, it was like a joke for the production company. They were like, yeah, come on, wait, watch this. Come on, sing a song. You know, and I had no idea really what I just knew that it was a piece of theater that was talking to me at that time.
Yeah, it was all about just protesting against the Vietnam War.
It was all against all of that.
Just, you know, young people just.
Yes, taking hold of you know, a truth to power.
Yeah.
You know, it was about the war, it was about sexism, it was about classism, it was about racism, and it was really good. So I get to Paris and I get a job as a dresser. Now, if you know anything about hair, everyone's sort of scantily. Yeah.
If not,
anything. You know, right?
So nice few one. Dresses, few dressing yes. jobs to do.
You know, and after a hiatus, my brother didn't come into the theater one night. And you know, there's that song in Chorus Line that goes, I can do that. I can do that. Well, I said, I can do that.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that story.
Yeah.
When I first saw Hair, I was about 14, and I'd just been a bridesmaid, and my parents booked theatre tickets. First time I'd ever been to the theatre, not knowing what it was about, and they got the cheapest seats in the front row, and we sat there.
In the front row?
As Elaine Page, Paul Nicholas, everyone just took all their clothes off.
Yeah.
And we're 2 feet in front of us. Yeah. Oh, my God. Talk about a first introduction to theatre. Obviously, it made me want to go into theatre. It just looked so joyful.
Yes.
But you can imagine that car journey on the way home, because back in the day, you never sort of discussed things like that. And it was just this excruciatingly tense car journey on the way home. But it is joyful because everyone does just strip off.
Yes, yes. And
if you're 14, that's quite a lot of Paul Nicholas to see you.
Probably more than you really want to, but yes.
And meanwhile, you never brought your brother home from Paris.
I did.
But your parents lost you to Paris.
No, it was really wild, because when my task was to bring him back, I brought him back for Thanksgiving because they had a hiatus with the company. And he took a look around and we looked at each other and thought, you know, the Vietnam War was just finished. It was getting over. Nixon was doing what Nixon was doing. I was becoming a lot more politically aware, I think. And I thought, you know, I have a choice to either be here or not. So I decided to go back.
Mm.
You know, and I went back to Paris. The show was only on for maybe another month after that. They were mounting another tour. One going into France and one going into Scandinavia. I got the one going to Scandinavia. And
Scandinavia, that must have been weird because people take their clothes off with
all the time
ease
anyway.
In Scandinavia.
Yes. Your clothes off in Scandinavia? It's bloody cold. It's cold, cold, cold. You don't really want to take your clothes off in Scandinavia.
I've done the hot tubs in Finland, in Helsinki.
Yeah. Oh, Clark, what a life well lived, frankly.
It's been a blessing.
And
it really
so
has.
Joyful to
and
think
to
of you now.
And to be here this hour in the morning drinking wine.
With your oldest friend.
I know, my oldest
Clark.
Friend.
That nuisance in the dressing room thinking, why does she come in?
There
every
she
night?
Is again.
Oh, God. But I'm like that with theatre. I'm upset. You should have seen me at the Rocky Horror Show.
I can only imagine.
A show gets under my skin, and I like to go every night because it's different every night.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't really like film as a medium, to be honest, because it's too settled.
Yeah, people think that it's boring. You know, how can you do the same thing the same way every night? Well, you're not.
Clark, thank you so much. It's been a joy. So lovely to see you again after all this time. Oh.
My girl.
You can't believe you're so nice to me after all this time.
Well, why wouldn't I be? Unless you're the one that stole my...
Well, you know, I did like to always take away a little memento from my time in the dressing room.
Cheers.
Yes, cheers, Will. Thank you. Well, that's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. The series producer is Anya Pierce, the producer Callum McRae, and the assistant producer has been Shana Johnson.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your favourite podcast app.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wines and another great guest.
And remember that all of the wines we tasted today are noted in the episode description, and you can get your hands on all of them from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
But from all of us here at the Tap and Bottle, thank you very much for listening. We hope to see you next week for more Wine Times.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.